in this particular season to keep our hearts tuned before you, looking for the second coming of Jesus Christ. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Jerome Corsi. Hi, Jerry. How are you doing tonight?
I'm great, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing just great. Now, well as can be expected under the dire circumstances, but what would you like to talk about? Would you like to talk about the economy? What would you like to talk about?
The economy is a good place to start.
All right, fine, because certainly lots of things are happening, you know. Certainly they've been telling us that things are looking better, that, employment was down to 9.6, and then when they knew that it was going up to 9.8%, the president left the country and went over to Afghanistan, where he'd be safe, and left, of course, the explanation to Joe Biden. How do you explain this with all the things we're doing and unemployment keeps rising? Go right ahead.
Well, first of all, I agree with you, Dr. Stan. It's pretty convenient that Barack Obama took off today and showed up in Afghanistan, did not have to stay and face the music of the higher unemployment. Because what this higher unemployment really shows is that all the deficit spending, all the attempts to use Keynesian economics have failed. The stimulus plan failed. We're now 2 years into the Obama presidency, and everything Obama has done to create jobs, now we're at 9.8% of unemployment instead of 9.6. It's going up. And President Obama, instead of facing the music, heads off on another trip to Afghanistan, unannounced, with apparently no purpose. I mean, President Obama gets to Afghanistan. He doesn't even have a face-to-face meeting with Karzai. The weather's bad. They have a telephone conference. He could have had a telephone conference with Karzai sitting in the White House. So he spent all this money flying to Afghanistan. It's clearly a cover for the fact that the Obama policies have not worked. And I think to understand that the basic point I want to make is that this is not a classic Keynesian recession. It's not a classic post-war recession, where deficit spending is going to put jobs in place. What I said when I wrote the America for Sale book was that this is what globalism looks like. And it's been Republicans and Democrats alike, going back to George H.W. Bush. We've sent the jobs to India and China, competing with labor that makes under a dollar an hour. Those jobs are not coming back, and the American middle class has been decimated. We've also, from the left, opened the border, imported an underclass to compete with jobs in the lower end. So the globalism of both the right and the left have resulted in a deeply diminished U.S. middle class. And the recession that we're in is a worldwide global recession that's probably going to last, I'm estimating, as long as a decade.
And, of course, really, the great tragedy is so many people are losing their homes, so many people are losing their jobs, so many people really are almost losing hope. And the idea that we're going to be able to spend our way out of this, certainly, we don't know how much the Fed has really put out, but it sounds like a trillion and a half, maybe $2 trillion, something like that. I mean, they put out a lot of money. But really, to stabilize the whole, trying to stabilize the whole world, we find out now they gave $3.3 trillion out of the banks. A lot of them were European banks when this whole house of cards started to come unraveled. And they think, well, my goodness, everything's all right now, but it really isn't all right. We have an unsustainable, level of debt. And really, I'd like Jerry to address that issue. I mean, certainly, how much debt can a nation carry? And by next year, why, our debt's going to be 100% of our gross domestic product, and they tell us unsustainable. And I think we're going to move into a period of austerity and lower living standards. I think that's exactly the plan, but I'd like to know what Dr. Corsi thinks. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Jerry, as I'm reading the articles put out by the elite, Richard Haass, president of the Council on Foreign Relations, Mortimer Zuckermer, the editor of U.S. News and World Reports, both trilateralists, recent articles they've written suggest we're moving into a period of austerity and lower living standards. And they seem to be preparing us to accept the inevitable. There's just no way out. And is there any way out?
Well, I think, Dr. Stan, look, let's look at the exact facts as we're dealing with them. We're right now, we ran a $1.3 trillion deficit with Barack Obama in fiscal year 2010. That's the second trillion-dollar deficit we've had under President Obama. It's the most ever in American history. George W. Bush, and I thought George W. Bush was really running excessive deficits, had a $500 billion deficit his last year in office. So Barack Obama is easily approaching three times the Bush deficit. And when you take a look at the accumulated debt of the United States, we're now close to $14 trillion. As you pointed out, our gross domestic product is only about $14.6 trillion. In 2011, we're going to have a accumulated national debt at over 100% of our gross domestic product. That's a tipping point. When nations hit this, they tend to go in the direction of Greece or Ireland. I mean, we're a much bigger economy. It won't happen overnight. But what will happen is that our debt is going to get to a point where foreign nations will no longer easily grant us the credit to keep running these deficits. And what's the Federal Reserve doing? The Federal Reserve is saying, well, we'll engage in quantitative easing, too, to keep the economy going, to try to create jobs. What that means is the Federal Reserve, through a manipulation of numbers, just on a computer, creates $600 billion of new money. And the Federal Reserve is going to buy Treasury debt with that, which is monetizing our debt. We're basically using the MasterCard to pay the Visa debt. It's going to end up in inflation and a devaluation. Russia and China announced within the past 2 weeks they're not going to use dollars any longer to settle their bilateral trade. The dollar is on its way out as a world standard of foreign exchange reserves. That's inevitable now. And most Americans aren't aware that this diminished capacity of the United States puts us into a debtor nation status.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Corsi is simply pointing out that by next year, by 2011, why we will be having a debt which is 100% of our gross domestic product. And basically at that point, why the economy becomes unmanageable. You're about the same status as Greece. You're a lot larger than Greece. Things are not going to fall apart quite as rapidly, but they are going to fall apart. And, of course, China and Russia now have decided among themselves they're not going to use the dollar to begin to save their settle their debts with one another. And then, of course, another thing that really bothers me, Jerry, is the fact that what happens when the interest rates go up? Right now, the interest rates are very low. You can borrow 1 or 2% of Treasury bonds. I think what 1 or 2% on Treasury bills. But what happens if the interest rates start going up? I can remember when interest rates were up to 18% back there in about 1980. They had to stop the inflation. But, you know, what happens when you've got a massive debt and you've got interest rates going up, pretty soon all the money that comes into the federal government goes to pay interest on the national debt. At what time do we get there? This is what David Walker's been warning about. He used to be the commissioner of the currency, something like that.
He was the head of the GAO, the Government Accountability Office.
Right. Well, basically, if the interest rates go up, we're in real trouble, aren't we?
Well, yes, and Dr. Stan, the only reason the interest rates have not gone up is because we have the Federal Reserve buying Treasury debt, which artificially keeps interest rates low. Now, we can do that for a while. We did it in through March of 2010. The Federal Reserve bought $1.7 trillion of U.S. debt. Mostly, it was Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac paper, mortgage paper. But now in this quantitative easing too, the Federal Reserve is going back to buying more Treasury debt, $600 billion. This will be all Treasury debt. So now we've got this $1.7 trillion in quantitative easing one, $600 billion. So now we've got, $2.3 trillion in quantitative easing one and two. And now we've learned the Federal Reserve has put $3.3 trillion into the foreign banks of the world economy. So we're up to, $5.6 trillion. The Federal Reserve has just created money through computer notations that they created this money artificially, and they've pumped it into the world economy. Now, in the temporary, right now, it'll mean interest rates are low because the Federal Reserve is buying Treasury debt. But the long-term future is if we continue to run the deficit, which we're going to do, because the entitlement programs are growing, the tax revenues are decreasing, unemployment is remaining high at 9.8%. As I wrote in America for Sale, this is what globalism looks like. And so we're headed into a world and an environment where inevitably interest rates are going to start to rise. We won't be able to finance our deficits any longer. And, Dr. Stan, I wrote a chapter in America for Sale, The Demise of the Dollar, and I've maintained this is a conscious plan because the solution that's going to be offered is for the International Monetary Fund to come in and to globalize even further the problem that's developing in the European Union and in the United States. Say the only solution is the Federal Reserve and the International Monetary Fund working as a one-world central bank and moving towards regional and global currencies that will no longer be under sovereign nation control. Forget about the United States of America. This will be under the control of the world and global authorities, which want to use this crisis to push us into more globalism.
I think that's such an important point. Once we no longer issue our own currency, once our currency is issued by somebody else, we are no longer a sovereign nation. I think you're absolutely right. I think this whole thing is planned, and because these people are not stupid. I mean, they know that you can't, you spend your way into prosperity. That's what this whole idea is. My goodness, we got a problem. We've got too much debt. What are we going to do? We're going to simply spend more money. We have to borrow more money. You're not going to get out of debt by borrowing more money. And this is basically what we're saying, or either that or just creating money out of nothing. We're creating money out of nothing. But down the line, this creates an inflationary spiral. And it may not be very bad for a few years, but sooner or later, this thing, all these dollars that are all throughout the world, the reserve currency of the world, most of the countries are carrying dollars, so about 60-70% of the reserves are in dollars. And what happens when they say, we don't trust the dollar, it's going down in value, we want to unload our dollars, and what happens if China stops buying our debt?
Well, I think a key point I want to make here is that, again, it's central to the argument I made in America for Sale. People have got to read the book. We put it in paperback. Get the paperback. It's cheaper. It's the same book. I didn't revise it. It's the same book. The political left and the political right are in agreement on globalism. People have got to understand how this works. On the political right, David Rockefeller, the multinational corporation, the Council on Foreign Relations, David Rockefeller said for generations, decades, my corporations are in 30 or 40 countries, your currency, United States, your laws are a speed bump. We want to operate under a global environment in which the multinational corporations set the rules. And the left says, well, we'll open the borders. Workers of the world unite. we'll have free migration of labor to wherever it makes sense. And so we open the borders and we import an underclass while we're exporting the high-paying jobs in manufacturing to China and the high-paying technical jobs to India, you know, reading x-rays and medical, creating medical files and doing the legal work behind all the legal research work and all the other technical jobs go to India. And at the same time, the borders are open and we import an underclass. Well, the political right realizes that by shipping the high-paying jobs to the third world, we're going to unemploy the U.S. middle class. But by combining in globalism with the political left, political left says, don't worry about it. We're importing an underclass. We'll create the social welfare net. We'll have all the socialism in place so people who are unemployed can be getting their benefits from government, dependent on government. And the political right, the political left, combine on this. Socialism and multinational corporations are partners advancing the goal of globalism.
And I think that's such an important point. The multinational corporations are working hand in glove with the socialists, pushing this whole idea of globalism, which is basically destroying the middle class. That's what it's going to end up doing.
No globalist of the left. Al Gore is a good example. There's many. George Soros. None of the intellectual and political sponsors of globalism from the left ever expected that they themselves would be poor. They want to create the social welfare net to enslave the majority of people into government dependency, which is no different than it was done under, you know, a national socialism, you know, the socialism of the Nazis or the communists. They all had the same concept from the left. People forget that the Nazis were from the left. This point was made by Hayek in his book Road to Serfdom. Jonah Goldberg made the same point in Liberal Fascism. But at any rate, the whole idea from the left is that the vast majority of people will be unemployed and dependent on government. And from the political right, which sees the multinational corporations surging ahead and sees themselves as the elite, running the multinational corporations, being the lawyers, the CPAs, the advisors to the multinational corporations, their whole program is predicated on transferring the jobs to the third world, China, India, where labor can be again exploited. And it doesn't advance anything. This is a whole, as it were, diabolical plan in which globalism is just the current modern international formula to the race of the human being, the human race, heading towards serfdom once again. And people's got to understand, though people, I constantly deal with people who say, well, it's Barack Obama on the left, and he's headed towards this global view, and he's imposing socialism on it. I say, wait a minute, Barack Obama's on the same program that George H.W. Bush was on. Unless you get above it all and see that this is globalism and where it's intended, you won't realize that one of the reasons all this deficit spending, all this Keynesianism isn't working is because this is the first structural global recession in which unemployment is caused by globalism and is not caused by a typical post-war downturn.
And I think the hardest thing for most people to understand is that jobs that have gone overseas are not coming back. And basically, the standard of living is rising and rising very rapidly in China. The standard of living is rising and rising very rapidly over in India. Their gross domestic product is about 8 to 9% in India and probably about 8% in China. But this is the plan. The plan is to raise the living standards in the other countries and to lower the living standards here. Would you agree with that?
I agree entirely, Dr. Stan. It's exactly the plan.
And we have to let the people understand this. I mean, certainly our politicians aren't going to say this. They're going to go along with this. After all, the globalists are the ones who give them the money to stay in power. And we're not getting this through the regular media, but Dr. Scorsese's book really is an excellent, excellent source of information. People have to understand the common denominator is globalism, and it unites the right and the left. And the only difficulty is there's no place in between for people who want to maintain their freedom. I think whatever happens, we're going to have a much lower standard of living. The question is, will we have a lower standard of living and be free, or will we have a lower standard of living and be totally enslaved, having lost all freedom? We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Jerry Corsi. Go right ahead, Jerry.
Well, Dr. Stan, people have to understand that if we take a look at the job situation, jobs going to India and China, and we were sold this idea we were going to have a...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work, it's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 316 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN. 316-COIN.
About. I mean, certainly Rush Limbaugh is not going to tell you that the globalism is the plan to impoverish the middle class in America and raise living standards throughout the world, and David Rockefeller is behind it. But you go right ahead.
Well, in America for Sale, I wrote a chapter on the plan to destroy the dollar. And, going back 2 years ago when I wrote the book, and I've been writing about this for years, warning people that it's been planned to destroy the dollar. If you take a look at the writings of people like take a look at Mundell. Mundell, who is a economist at Columbia, who created the euro, argued going back 10 years ago that we needed to reduce the position of the United States dollar internationally to create the International Monetary Fund and to utilize the International Monetary Fund special drawing rights to settle international trade. Now, Mundell sold this plan to the Chinese. And when, Robert Mundell's whole idea was from China to advance the International Monetary Fund, and the G20 meeting in April 2009 in London, President Obama signed onto a plan with the G20 nations agreed to put $250 billion more into the International Monetary Fund to prepare these special drawing rights, these credits, to be the alternative to the dollar in settling international trade. Now, as we advance this forward, just in the last 2 weeks, China and Russia have declared they're not going to utilize any longer the dollar to settle their bilateral international trade. They're going to trade in each other's currency. And when you read the dispatches coming out of their meeting and their agreement, they said this was online with the plan to ultimately have the International Monetary Fund come in. And so when an international trade is done, country selling ends with currency, and instead of translating that, trading that into dollars, they're going to take it to the International Monetary Fund and get special drawing rights, these credits, and the dollar will be diminished as an international currency. Now, what this means to the average American is that China and Russia have lost confidence, as was intended, as was planned, because the dollar no longer has its value once we're printing so much currency to handle our deficits. So countries like China and Russia don't want to end up with dollars. China's got $880 billion worth of U.S. Treasury debt. They're worried that as we debase our dollar with more debt, more printing of money, their holdings are going to be devalued. Even the Federal Reserve today is talking about creating inflation. I never thought in my lifetime I'd hear the Federal Reserve saying their purpose was to create inflation.
Because their purpose was to give us a stable currency, and then later on they said full employment. Well, we can see what a great job they've done with employment, but at no place was there ever an idea that they would destroy the value of our currency, which is what inflation is doing. But that is exactly the plan, and the American people don't understand. These people are not answerable to our elected representatives, the American people. They're answerable to this globalist group that wants to destroy the value of our currency and impoverish the American people, which is what's going to happen.
And, Dr. Stan, there's no better proof of that. I mean, I'm holding right now the Financial Times from Thursday, December 2nd. I'm looking at it. Okay, here we've got the announcement, finally, the Federal Reserve having to come forward with documents they've never shown before. $3.3 trillion in emergency credit was provided by the Federal Reserve, not to U.S. banks, but to foreign banks, banks like Barclays of the United Kingdom, Switzerland's UBS, Dexia in Belgium. Well, the Federal Reserve also committed in the last 5 days, this past week, to work with the International Monetary Fund to increase, maybe even double, from $1 trillion to $2 trillion, the European Stabilization Fund. The Federal Reserve and the International Monetary Fund are becoming the one world central bank.
And, of course, what's going to happen is this happens, why certainly the dollar will become less and less valuable. And most people are invested in maybe bonds. Well, but the bonds will lose their value because the value of the dollar will go down. People have their money in pension funds or insurance policies or all sorts of things, and people don't see where this is going to end. People always waiting for, well, it's going to be all right, you know, the dollar's going to come back again. It always has in the past. Ladies and gentlemen, the dollar isn't coming back again. And you better understand what's going on. Yes, this could be rescued. There are things that could be done. But you're going to have to get involved, and you're going to have to get involved right now. It's a song from long since past, and I wish that God would bless America again, but when we see some of the things that our people are doing, and the fact that there's no outcry against torture, and nobody talks about the fact we've got our people over in Afghanistan, and the Afghan people hate us, and they want to get rid of us, and we won't leave. We've been there for 9 years occupying the country, and the same is true with Iraq. They want us to leave, and nobody here really wants to stand up and say, why don't we just bring our troops home? It would save, about $150 billion a year. We'd quit killing people throughout the world, quit antagonizing the Muslims throughout the world, because they feel that we're occupying those countries, and we are. Well, go ahead, Jerry. I don't want to get off on another subject, because I think the financial subject is seminal to everything going on today.
Well, it's tough to understand, but what's going on in the European... Let's take the European Union right now. You're having country after country. It started with Greece. It spread now to Ireland. Countries who are bankrupt. They are. The social welfare states are created at such a point. Their tax revenues don't support the benefits. The countries cannot any longer raise the debt they need because the expense of raising the debt is too great. Countries could default on this debt. So it's going to spread. It'll be Portugal. It'll be Spain, it'll be Italy. Now, Germany has been so far subsidizing this, and Germany's tiring of it because Germany's not going to subsidize the breakup of the euro. The euro is going to break up. But instead of going back to the national currencies, what's happening is, take a look at each one of these crises. Greece, what happens? The International Monetary Fund steps in and makes a big loan, and that temporarily takes care of the debt. But the reality is now the International Monetary Fund controls Greece. That's going to happen in Ireland. International Monetary Fund and Spain and Portugal and Italy. International Monetary Fund, with the backdoor cooperation of the Federal Reserve, puts the money in, and ultimately the sovereignty of these nations is totally now compromised. Even if the euro falls apart, even if...
Hold that thought for just a moment there, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Dr. Corsi is saying that certainly Greece had to take a big loan from the International Monetary Fund, and they're probably going to have to take another one, and we're going to see the same thing with Spain and with Ireland and with Italy and with Greece, and all of these countries are going to have to simply, borrow money from the International Monetary Fund. But remember, if you borrow money from somebody, they control you. You borrow money on your home, why, the bank controls your home. You borrow money on your car, the bank controls your car. And Dr. Corsi believes that the European currency is going to be able to begin to break up. But as it does, who is going to own those countries? And, of course, it's going to be the International Monetary Fund. So go right ahead. Before we do, why don't you go ahead and get out your website and tell people about the Red Alert and your books and how they can get them.
Well, as I said, I'm a senior staff reporter for WorldNet Daily, and Red Alert, which is my weekly newsletter, economics newsletter, is free. You get it through WorldNet Daily. There's one of the bars on the side in the WorldNet Daily directory. You'll see the Red Alert. You can click that. You'll go to the Red Alert website, redalert.wnd.com. You've got to subscribe. We send it out electronically, and we need you to subscribe. I've been in the securities industry for 25 years. I'm a managing director at Guilford Securities in New York, G-I-L-F-O-R-D. If you go to guilfordsecurities.com, there's a tab at the top. You see Financial Services Group. If you click that, you'll see the page with my picture and a form to fill out. If you fill that form out, we'll get you the Red Alert newsletter every week free, and we'll send you updates from Guilford Securities in New York.
All right, fine. But I think that basically people have to understand what's going on. Gold hit over 14. I think it was closed about $1,405 an ounce today, and silver is going up. And this simply reflects the fact that people throughout the world have lost confidence in the dollar. I mean, the Chinese government is buying a great deal of gold. The Indians are buying a great deal of gold. The Arabs are buying a great deal of gold. And the people throughout Europe who have any idea what's going on are buying gold and silver because they realize that all the currencies in the world are beginning to fail. And that's the reason that the price of gold is going up. And maybe the price of the value is not going up. And the price is going up because of the fear of the value of the currency is going down. But we are in the most difficult times, and I've been at this for 48 years, and this is the most difficult time I've seen. This is the culmination of everything we've been talking about, and it's all coming to pass today. The nightmare is unfolding before us. Go right ahead, Jerry.
Well, the key to understanding this and seeing this, Dr. Stan, is to realize that the euro is collapsing and the dollar is collapsing, and that people like Robert Mundell, the economist from Columbia who created the euro, have planned this from the beginning. The idea is to come in with the International Monetary Fund and the Federal Reserve, to have them be the world central bank. If the euro will be buttressed, if the euro will probably survive, the dollar will probably be forced into a combination. I thought originally it was going to be the Amero for North American Union. But Mexico's in such disarray with the drug war, it'll probably first be a combination between the Canadian dollar and the U.S. dollar, which are both strong, to create the first North American currency, create an African currency, work to create a European currency based on China's currency. I mean, the dollar and the euro in their current state is, dollar as a national currency is dead. It's not declared dead yet, but with countries like Russia and China saying they're going to do their own bilateral trades, they're going to settle in ruble and they're going to settle in yuan, not dollars. To me, that's earth-shaking. That's a huge announcement. The idea that the Federal Reserve is debasing our currency in the United States by this quantitative easing, another $600 billion to buy our own treasury debt. Federal Reserve announcing it wants to create inflation, which is another way of saying it wants to devalue the dollar. Now, that's unprecedented. In my lifetime, the entire purpose of the Federal Reserve was declared to be to control inflation, not to create it, to support the dollar, not to debase it. But the globalists right now are operating with a crisis and a way to create fear, and that fear to move toward the globalism that they wanted to push the world to, which is the ultimate demise of the U.S. worker, demise of U.S. freedoms, the destruction of the United States as a sovereign nation. And this is what the globalists have intended from the beginning.
I'm afraid you're right, and I think we're seeing this whole plan of theirs already unfolding now. People think these things are happening by accident. They are not happening by accident. These are brilliant people. They know exactly what they're doing. But if you read this recent article by Richard Haass, president of the Council on Foreign Relations, member of the Trilateralists, article in the U.S. News and World Report by Mortimer Zuckerman, member of the Council on Foreign Relations and Trilateralists, and they tell us we're going to have to just make up our minds to the fact we're going to live at a much lower level. We're going to have austerity. We're going to have lower living standards. We're going to have to cut back on Social Security. We're going to have to raise the age of retirement. We're going to have to cut back on Medicare. We're going to have to cut back on defense spending. And, of course, we could cut back on defense spending very readily because we're doing everything we can to build up our enemies, China. We're doing everything we can to build up its military capacity and Russia's military capacity. I hope that's not in preparation for a war, but we've done this with other countries before. We did this in the 1930s, building up Adolf Hitler's Germany and even American corporations working all during the war when American boys were fighting and dying on the beaches of Normandy. Why, of course, the planes that were killing them, the tanks that were used against them, the trucks that were bringing the German soldiers into that area were all produced by American corporations, but we never talk about that. Anyway, Jerry, certainly I agree with you. We are in a crisis situation, but they keep telling us, oh, well, you know, it's just going to be a matter of time before the businesses start opening again, and, you know, certainly things are looking so much better, but the businesses aren't opening. Businesses continue closing. Major corporations continue moving overseas. And people don't understand this is not going to change until we actually get, we actually reinstall tariffs in this country so that our goods can compete. If we can't compete, why, we cannot exist with an export market. We need to protect American industry, and that's the one thing these people fear. You read what they say, oh, well, the worst thing we could do is try to protect America. I think we ought to protect America. What do you think, Jerry?
Well, I do, and the last third of my book, America for Sale, I devoted to saying, fighting back, to say no to the global New Deal. And, of course, I think the beginning is the Tea Party movement, which is a fundamental realignment of voters in the middle class saying no. But I laid out a 5-point plan saying no to the global New Deal. This is what it is. Number one, close down the Federal Reserve. We don't need the Federal Reserve. It's a private bank. We can issue money through the Treasury. We do everything the Federal Reserve does. And we don't, through the Treasury, we don't have to pay interest to a private bank to create our money. And by the way, a private bank that operates totally in secrecy, refuses to be audited, and refuses to let the American people know what it's doing. Number two, let's pull out of NAFTA, the CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, the World Trade Organization. If these are unfair agreements that are designed to export U.S. jobs, to not have anti-dumping provisions where countries like China that use slave labor subsidize their currency, send us defective goods, lead paint and toys, and destroy their environment, producing goods. We don't need to trade with those companies. Get rid of them. Number three, close down the United Nations, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank. We don't need them. If we go back to nation states and having nation states run their affairs, we don't need these international organizations. The international organizations are just, they're godless. They're pushing us into a slavery and abandonment of our rights. Number four, cut taxes. This is all my agenda in America for Sale. Cut taxes and close the IRS. We go to a flat tax, a value-added tax. We don't need to be paying income tax. It was unconstitutional to begin with. And five, create a gold-backed U.S. dollar for international trade. Start there. Get our currency back on the standard of the Founding Fathers, realize gold and silver. Begin with the international dollar. Start working with the domestic dollar. Get our currency out of this fiat currency condition. If we implement those five steps, I think we could reverse this globalism. And I talk about how, in America for Sale, how people have got to be prepared to live in communities where states' rights are dominant, where states are pulling out of the federal government, imperial government, and living in communities. There's 300 communities in the United States printing their own money, legal to do just like frequent flyer miles, and the dollars are bought, the local currency is bought at the banks at a discount, and it's accepted by merchants in the community. that agree to employ local people and sell goods made in the community and made in the United States.
Jerry, that is a wonderful, wonderful list, and I've never heard anything that I would agree with more. People have to understand that right now, why we have all these trade agreements with other countries that allow other countries to discriminate against us, but we don't discriminate against them. In fact, there's a new trade agreement that the Obama administration has drawn up with South Korea, and Ford Motor Company objects to it. Now, why would Ford Motor Company object to a fair trade treaty with South Korea? Wouldn't that be great? I mean, they bring their cars into our country, and we bring our cars into their country. Oh, that's not the way it works. I mean, South Korea, if you buy an American car, you're going to get an audit by their Internal Revenue Service. They're going to make your life miserable if you buy an American car. Little wonder Ford is saying, why should they be able to bring their cars into our country, but we can't do the same thing? But the American people don't understand. We allow the Chinese to discriminate against us. We allow the Japanese to discriminate against us because we want to transfer our wealth to other countries. That's what it's about. But, Jerry, the average individual can't understand that this thing is rigged so that they win, we lose.
Well, and I also, in America for Sale, laid out a plan for the 21st century American patriots, and it's again simple. Number one, secure the borders and enforce the immigration laws. We don't need to have an underclass supported. If we want 1 million immigrants from the Hispanic countries, fine. Let's get them here legally. Why do we have to get them here illegally? Two, involve Congress in all national emergency declarations. Quit putting all these powers and declare national emergencies in the presidency. Utilize crises to reduce our freedoms, to put Americans in fear. Congress has to declare a national emergency. Let's reduce the power of the presidency to do so. Number three, declare state sovereignty under the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. Ninth and Tenth Amendments say the only powers of the federal government are those specifically allocated to it. Let the states take back education, let the states take back hospitals, welfare, any number of functions. Limit the federal government to very few functions, national defense and international and interstate commerce, period. Number four, end all these bailouts, including the international bailouts the Federal Reserve is doing, and balance the federal budget. Quit spending. And last, number five, eliminate the social welfare program. We don't need federal social welfare programs. Let charity, let the states do it. Let people not have 99 weeks extended of unemployment insurance. People will go back to work if they quit being dependent on the government. Let's get the economy going, reduce taxes, eliminate the federal social welfare programs, and get people back to work.
I agree with you. And the thing is that there are a lot of people who would hire other people. My goodness, you hire somebody, you've got to pay Social Security, you've got to get Medicare on them, and then you've got to carry all sorts of insurance on them and workman's compensation. And it becomes such a burden to hire somebody that a lot of people just say, well, I'm not going to bother to do that. But what we need to do, I believe, certainly there are enough people who do have money, they could hire other people to come and help and work with them. We used to have domestic people came into the homes. Oh, we don't want to do that. You know, but what we've done is we've taken what was once charity, which was helping those truly in need, and we changed that into welfare. And then we changed it from welfare to entitlement. And people are entitled to be taken care of by the government without ever realizing that if you're entitled to be taken care of by the government, then the government also has to be able to control you, because the government has no money, and a government that can provide whatever you need must be able to take whatever you have and control you from the cradle to the grave. There's no other way. You're either going to be free or you're going to be taken care of by the state. And those are our two alternatives. I think most people would rather be free, but nobody ever explains what's going on.
Well, and people have got to realize that the globalists intend to profit from the crisis. I wrote in America for Sale, George Soros. He told the London Daily Mail in March 2009 that he was having a very good international financial crisis. He came out of retirement in 2007, starting to manage Quantum Investment Fund, and he's made $2.9 billion in doing so since 2007, including $1 billion made in 2008 when the financial crisis stimulus program started. So if you take a look at the George Soroses or the Al Gores flying around in their private jets, living in huge mansions while proclaiming to everybody else that global warming is going to destroy the planet and we all have to live in a diminished capacity, the globalists all think that they're going to benefit by creating a crisis in which the middle class of the United States is destroyed. And the Federal Reserve has been creating these bubbles, bubble in the mortgage market up to 2006, now a bubble in the stock market with interest rates at zero. And China's quickly saying America is for sale. China's saying we won't quit, we won't continue just buying U.S. debt. We want assets. China made a $1.1 billion investment in oil and natural gas fields around San Antonio. The Obama administration says, go ahead. The Bush administration wouldn't let China buy Unocal, which was owned by a California oil company because of national security interests. We don't care anymore. America is now for sale.
And I think we're going to see with this massive amount of American money that China has, they're going to be buying up more and more, either here or elsewhere. They're going to be buying up the commodities. They're going to be buying up gold and silver. In fact, one reason that commodity prices have been as high as they have is because China's been simply stockpiling them. They have massive stockpiles of the commodities, especially those that I think that you might use if there was going to be a war. And then what was that missile trail just off the west coast of Santa Barbara here just recently? Ladies and gentlemen, we live in a very, very dangerous world. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program, Jerry. We live in very unsettling times, but I think the most dangerous thing today is the economy. So you just give us your parting thoughts. We've got about 2.5 minutes.
Well, that's it.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.
The NAFTA, the World Trade Organization, put a tariffs on, protect American industry. We don't need the rest of the world. But what we do need is to preserve America. But we're going to have to preserve it without the welfare state because we can't afford it. The whole house of cards is coming down. We've got 70 to 75 million baby boomers retiring within the next 20 years. And certainly Medicare is bankrupt. Social Security is bankrupt. They've lied to us. There is no money in the trust fund. You can't trust the trust fund because there's no money in the trust fund. It's all spent. And, of course, it's redeemable by the Treasury, but the Treasury doesn't have any money. So it's just going to have to be bought, and the Federal Reserve is buying up the bonds now. And by so doing, they're diluting the value of your currency and stealing from you and unborn generations. We should never have debts. In fact, Thomas Jefferson said government should never be able to borrow money. You have to incur a debt, you pay it in your generation, you don't leave it for your children. Well, we're leaving debts for our grandchildren. It's time to take America back. Certainly, if you haven't heard my talk on the financial tsunami, it comes with a syllabus. We gave it, maybe 5 years ago. My talk on the financial Armageddon, we gave that a couple of years ago, and explained exactly how they intentionally brought down this whole house of cards. And, of course, we've got pamphlets on the financial breakdown. And we point out that when they were telling us that the whole economy was shutting down, they were lying back there in October of 2008 because they wanted to get the money, they wanted to get the TARP money, and they wanted to convince people there was a crisis. Once you convince people there was a crisis, well, you begin to create this state of fear. They know they're playing games with our mind. You need to get our pamphlets on the financial collapse or financial meltdown, I think is the title to it. You need to get our pamphlet on the final warning. It's certainly Andrew Jackson's farewell address back in 1837. You need to get my pamphlet on the history of money. There are three of them. They will give you the information you need to have an understanding of what's going on. But the most important thing is, you have to understand they're destroying the value of the currency. When gold is soaring, people throughout the world understand what's going on. And the people in China are buying gold frantically. People in Europe are buying gold frantically. I mean, that's the reason gold has hit over $1,400 an ounce today. I can remember when it was $35 an ounce. I can remember buying gold at $35 an ounce, and today it's $1,406 an ounce. Understand that the whole structure of our society is coming down. We're moving into a period of chaos and crisis. What's going to happen if they do not renew the unemployment? We've got a couple of million people out there with no source of income. How long are they going to be able to continue providing food stamps? We have 43 or 44 million people on food stamps today. Certainly, you go to our website, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs. You can watch our DVDs. You can read our newsletters. They're all free there. And certainly, all the things we've talked about, the final warning, Andrew Jackson's farewell address, it's all up there. You can pull it down for nothing. I like to have it in a little pamphlet form. This is why we offer them to you. But our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. I need to remind you, Radio Liberty is still primarily listener-supported, and if you're in a position to help us, we'd love to hear from you. If you're interested in getting certainly your omega-3 oils and you have any reservations about the fish oil, well, basically we're offering the krill oil. The krill oil has almost no mercury in it. It's the healthiest form of your omega-3. And then, of course, we also have the prostate support and the menopause support and the immune support. Certainly this time of year, you ought to be taking immune support. It's a compound compiled by a very reliable corporation that has been at this for a long period of time and this really seems to help the immune system. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. If you're looking for a Christmas present, Think of Newell Ohler's piano music. We have them on CDs. We have several of them are available, and you can learn on certainly either by calling us or going to our website. Please pray for Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and hopefully they're going to be the views of William Grigg, because it's Friday evening, and we always enjoy having William on at the end of the session. And there's William right now. Hi, William. How are you doing?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me on your program again.
Well, it's always a pleasure. In fact, we had one of our guests today who commented on something you'd written and said, my goodness, that man has a way with words. And I had to agree.
How kind.
Anyway, what are we going to be talking about tonight?
Unfortunately, we're not going to be talking about anything terribly pleasant. Such are the times we're sentenced to live in, I'm afraid. I've talked before about the fact that we're seeing the great denouement. It's a fancy word that means the great unraveling or the great revelation. Apocalypse, of course, is another word that means revelation. What we're seeing right now is the disrobing of the malignant state that rules us, and we're seeing it in the full majesty of its evil. And we've reached a point now where there is such widespread impunity on the part of the people who rule us that it's impossible to be sufficiently cynical to overestimate the level of their pure concentrated malice. About the only thing that is considered a crime now, at least from the perspective of the power elite, would be the unauthorized disclosure of information that displays in detail the crimes that they commit and the corruption that characterizes them. And of course, the WikiLeaks information, which has been put out for public inspection this week, and some of the commentary about it really illustrate what I'm talking about to good advantage. This is, of course, a mixed blessing, if indeed you want to call it a blessing. There's something to be said for the proposition, and to paraphrase Patrick Henry, that we should be informed about everything that's going on. We should know the worst. That's something that anybody who actually loves this country will require, will be that we have the opportunity, at least, to be relatively well-informed. And that people who are committing crimes putatively in our name will not be able to do so beneath the cover of official secrecy. To that extent, the WikiLeaks disclosures I would consider to be a blessing. Unfortunately, of course, you've got a situation now where, because of the selective transparency of the system we live in, the government, of course, that rules us has almost unfettered access to everything that we do, every item of business we transact, every trip that we make. Our medical records are pooled to a large extent and are transparent to government inspection. All this stuff, of course, is being vacuumed up into huge databases that the government has access to or that the government controls, that the government's manufactured. And because there's a porousness in the system, that has been exploited now by WikiLeaks and their sources and feeders, we know that this information is vulnerable in ways that we probably wouldn't have imagined 4 or 5 years ago, and that's very, very threatening and very worrisome. Not necessarily just because of the fact that private actors like Mr. Assange and his associates would have access to the information, but rather that anybody would have that kind of detailed access to our personal and private information. That makes us very vulnerable indeed, and that's another edge of the blade that we're talking about, as it were.
Well, I certainly share your concern, but basically we know that they're collecting dossiers about American citizens. They're actually being coordinated at places called fusion centers. Go on the Internet, look up fusion centers, and actually Jerry Ventura, Governor Ventura, had an excellent program on the fusion centers, but you can see them. And here's where they take all the intelligence reports from the FBI, the CIA, the DARPA, from the NSA, and from the military intelligence. All these records they have on you, put them together so they know everything you do. Go right ahead.
The way that the prison house system that we're living in is supposed to operate is modeled after Jeremy Bentham's panopticon. The concept I've described before, but I'll review it briefly now. The panopticon would be an ideal prison that would be pyramidal in shape. And this is a theoretical construct, but it's one that serves as sort of a template for every surveillance society, ours included. At the top of the pyramid would be the warden or whatever officer the warden had assigned the duty of keeping the subjects of this prison, the inmates, under scrutiny. They would not be able to see him, but he would be able to see any one of them or several of them at the same time, if he desired, at any time of his choosing. The idea is that because none of the inmates in this prison system would know when he's under scrutiny and hence subject to some kind of punitive sanction, he would police his own behavior, or if allowed to mingle with others, they would work in such a way that they would police themselves. They would enforce conformity out of a sense of permanent, incurable insecurity regarding the will of the individual who would be able to inspect their actions. Now, there's a similar concept in Orwell's 1984, in which the secret police operating for the Ministry of Love would have the ability physically to tap into any communications that were being conveyed by the telescreen network. And you never knew at what point which of the circuits would be active and the communications being broadcast on that circuit would be vulnerable to receipt by the agents of the totalitarian regime. So the idea is that people would police themselves in the absence of overt coercion by the agents of Big Brother's regime. And this is the way that every totalitarian society, including a soft totalitarian society like ours, I don't think we should mix or mince words here about the nature of the government ruling us. We're no longer a republic. We're no longer even a democracy, a mass commercial democracy that's sort of shielding or providing cover, a facade for an oligarchy. This is a soft totalitarian system because everything we do is subject to government scrutiny. And the government ruling us basically has emancipated itself from laws. So, yeah, while we do enjoy some of the amenities, perquisites of American citizenship of the sort that have characterized our country for centuries, those can be savagely withdrawn from us at any time. And in that sense, the length of our tether is not quite known, but it's a very real construct. But in any society of this sort, because the subjects of necessity outnumber the agents of government coercion, means have to be devised whereby people will regiment themselves and enslave themselves to the benefit of the rulers. This is something that Etienne de Bottier wrote about centuries ago.
Okay, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's William Grigg, and he's just talking about how we really live in a soft type of dictatorship where, of course, we are being watched all the time. Everything we do is being monitored. Every time you buy anything with a credit card, there's a record of what you bought. If you buy anything, you know, certainly in the Safeway store or the store with these so-called, club cards, why Safeway club card, there's a record, and they can watch and they can determine exactly exactly what you're buying. Certainly the video cameras are going up every place. We're moving into basically a totally controlled society where they can listen to your telephone calls with Project Echelon. They can track your actions with, if you have a cell phone or you have a car with GPS in it. They know everything you're doing, every place you're going, and they can watch you with those cameras everywhere. But go right ahead.
It's interesting you talk about cameras. The ubiquity, of course, of these passive devices of intelligence gathering. Down in Houston, over the last several months leading up to the election, there was a grassroots campaign that was mounted by a couple of people, one of whom was an attorney, but not otherwise disreputable, I guess you'd say. And the purpose of this campaign was to put a ballot measure before the voters in that county of Texas on the use of red light cameras. And everywhere that red light cameras have been subjected to a popular vote, they've been defeated. Well, in Houston, what happened is that this ballot measure passed resoundingly, despite a lawsuit that was filed by the corporate entity that had a contract with the county to collect revenue by way of these surveillance cameras at red lights. This lawsuit was based on a specious reading of the Civil Rights Act, making the ludicrous claim that somehow presenting this measure for the voting public would disenfranchise minority voters in Houston and the surrounding county. That, of course, was a completely spurious argument, and the lawsuit didn't find any traction. But it was designed to harass, intimidate, and, if necessary, to tie up the citizens who had brought this grassroots ballot measure before the voters. The ballot measure passed, and it was immediately disregarded by the city council, by the county commissioners. They decided that it was more important to try to find some way to draw out the string on this issue so that they wouldn't be faced with the prospect of having to pay some kind of a kill fee for this contract that they had made that's no longer valid. The consent had been withdrawn by the people. They should go take their lumps, the county commissioner should, and simply discontinue this contract. Well, there was an injunction filed with the judge. The injunction was upheld long enough for the Department of Homeland Security to move in and issue a grant to the county, bypassing the voters entirely, so that rather than having county-functioning and county-operated cameras, they'd now be federal cameras that would be used not only for red light collection, that is to say, multing people under very dubious and constitutionally unsupportable circumstances with respect to traffic violations, but they would also be using these cameras for passive surveillance of other things. There are cameras of that sort that operate in cities like Denver, and there was a recent incident of police brutality that occurred in Lower Denver within the last 18 months or so, the video of which I posted on my blog, and it's really interesting that there is a horrible episode where this guy is thrown to the ground, savagely beaten by a police officer while several others watch. It turns out that the guy who was on the receiving end of this beating was on the telephone talking to his father about an arrest that was going on that he was concerned about. The father of the man who was the victim of this beating was a deputy sheriff in another county. So while he's on the phone talking to his dad about what these rogue police are doing, he ends up being brutally arrested and beaten and mistreated. And the camera, just as this begins, pans away from the action. Because at the time that this is happening, they're creating what is called Bivens material. That refers to a Supreme Court decision that deals with evidence which is to the benefit of somebody who's been on the receiving end of official abuse by a law enforcement officer, whether a federal agent or a local or state law enforcement officer. And so just at the very minute where there's critical evidence to be gathered, the camera pans away, which means that somebody was watching this in real time and using the mouse or the joystick or whatever controller he had at his fingertips to pan the camera away so that the police would not be held accountable. That, in microcosm, is what we're talking about here in terms of the system. Everything we do is to be perfectly transparent to those who presume to rule us and the agents of official coercion who carry out their commands, who harass us, intimidate us, regiment us, and expropriate us when considered necessary, but everything they do is to be opaque. We're living within a society, or we're living in a society, rather, that is completely surrounded by one-way mirrors. They can see everything we do, but we can't look in and see what they're doing in terms of their plans, their programs, and the things that would have to be considered official crimes that are committed supposedly with the imprimatur of the electorate. Now, the value of WikiLeaks here is that one little section of this all-encompassing one-way mirror was suddenly rendered transparent, at least to a certain extent. It's one of those I-see-through-a-glass-darkly type propositions where we can, in broad outline, start to see some elements of what's going on, confirming much of what we had assumed about the conduct of the government ruling us. It's really very much of a piece with the way that the late Brezhnev-era Soviet Union maintained the power and privileges of its ruling nomenclature. It's the same type of an arrangement where, rather than conducting themselves according to the rule of law, and in this case, of course, we're talking about our system being rooted in the Anglo-Saxon tradition of common law, which is an elaboration of biblical law, the Ten Commandments, the two great commandments, the Golden Rule. The common law is basically meant to be an application or built on specific case-by-case applications of those elements of biblical law, rather than being governed by this corpus of biblically defined common law. The people ruling us, the people acting in our name in the government, behave like swaggering, power-mad gangsters. Actually, that's not quite a fair analogy, because gangsters don't have nearly the ambition or the sense of entitlement of the people who are functionaries of the government in Washington, D.C. But the way that, for instance, Hillary Clinton collects what the Russians call kompromat on everybody of any consequence in international affairs, using the United Nations for the purpose of spying on, collecting biometric information, credit card information on diplomatic figures from both the Secretary of the United Nations and the various national delegations. That's the sort of stuff the Soviet Union has always done. That's one of the reasons why people like you and me, Dr. Stan, for decades have been referring to the United Nations as a spy nest. Of course it functions that way. And the Soviets took wonderful advantage of that opportunity, made wonderful use of the United Nations for that purpose, but it shouldn't surprise us that the United States does the same thing.
Well, could you explain to our listeners, was this in the WikiLeaks that it came yes. out, that basically Hillary was having people working in foreign embassies actually begin collecting, spying and collecting information, which is totally illegal?
Yeah. If, among other things, it goes back to what the Constitution in the Enumerated Powers Clause of Article 1, Section 8 refers to as the Congress having the authority to define offenses against the law of nations. That's a different concept from UN-centered international law. The law of nations is based on, once again, the Judeo-Christian, biblical, Anglo-Saxon common law concept of equal sovereignty. That is to say that we're supposed to conduct our affairs as a country in the same way that individuals conduct our affairs. Basically, it's, once again, sort of an elaboration of the Golden Rule. And there are treaties and understandings going back to the colonial period and the period of early American independence that recognize that you simply do not do that type of thing when you're conducting diplomatic affairs. You are not to be looking to seize advantage by finding ways of compromising people and making them susceptible to blackmail and other forms of illicit leverage. And if you want to make it a more contemporary case, you can talk about the 1961 Treaty and Convention of Vienna having to do with diplomatic relations through various multilateral bodies, as well as, of course, bilateral relations among countries. You simply cannot do that. It's illegal in any way that you want to examine it. But this has been standard operating procedure. I mean, down to the point where they're literally rifling through the soil, the tissues that people are leaving behind in pursuit of DNA samples for purposes that one can only speculate about, not being all that well informed about the current state of the art with respect to genetic testing and genetic engineering. I don't know what use they would make of that genetic material, but we do know that at every opportunity, this government, like the government in Great Britain, likes to collect DNA and build as comprehensive a database as possible for purposes that simply have to be nefarious, because there's no reason on earth why you should be collecting that material from people who have not in any way, shape, or form been charged with a crime, accused, much less convicted of a crime. But that's just one of the horrifying revelations that we see about what Madam Hillary has been doing. Another revelation that I thought was interesting, or a set of revelations, have to do with the shenanigans, the machinations of both the Bush and Obama administrations with respect to pressure being put on friendly governments to withdraw from investigations of criminal acts committed against citizens of those countries or legal residents residing in these countries. Spain, of course, was looking into some things that had been done that were that involved the torture and detention of their citizens. Germany was looking into other cases. Italy had an actual trial. But once again, the types of pressure that were brought to bear and the arrogance with which the Obama and Bush administrations put pressure on these countries is really more redolent of the Soviet Union than the Republic we're supposed to be.
Well, I think you're really basically what's going to happen is America gets into more and more trouble financially, and certainly we begin seeing increased instability at home. Nobody out there is going to be doing anything. They're all going to be cheering because we've been a bully. We've been forcing other countries to do what we wanted for too long a time. We've put our troops there. We've put our intelligence agency. We've kidnapped and tortured their citizens. And I think a lot of people are looking for America to fall. Go right ahead.
When you talk about the way that...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work, it's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
About the tragic situation that the United States of America, which had been the most universally loved country in the world because we practiced the virtue of minding our own business, was finding ourselves, we were finding ourselves entangled in the affairs of every country in the world to such an extent that where we had once been the most universally admired nation, we were going to become the most universally hated nation for, and I'm quoting, I'm paraphrasing very closely, our universal practice of imperialism by the dollar as our substitute for the sword. That's the best way to get people to hate us, is by inflicting ourselves on people in terms of coercion and subversion, rather than pursuing amicable, pacific, that is to say, peace-oriented commerce with all nations of goodwill, as Washington and Jefferson both admonished. And as people like John Quincy Adams and the founding generation that came to an end about 1826 or so reminded their contemporaries we were supposed to be. And now, of course, we find ourselves at the top of the world. We're on top of this rotting pyramid of debt and fraud. And just in the recent weeks, we have seen a signal event in the decay of America's imperium with the Chinese-Russian agreement to conduct business with themselves in currencies other than the dollar, which means that the dollar is no longer going to be the de facto reserve currency of the world when two of the world's most significant countries that are responsible for producing a lot of what the world consumes, Russia, of course, is a major energy producer, and immensely wealthy in terms of natural resources. China is the world's factory floor. These two countries, and most likely the other nations of the BRIC, that is to say Brazil, Russia, India, and China bloc, are going to start undermining the credibility of the dollar. And the only thing the dollar rests on right now is the willingness of people to take it. It's a brand name. It's a brand name that's based on the momentum of eras past in which the United States was the world's manufacturing and economic colossus. We are no more. We manufacture nothing but bad debt and worse pornography, quite frankly. Our main export right now are missiles, soldiers, and moralistic busybodies. And so that's pretty much a fulfillment of what Robert Welch was talking about in 1979. But you can go back even further to Garrett Garrett's Jeremiad back in 1952, when he was writing in his wonderful book, The American Story, about America's embrace of empire during the early Cold War with the advent of the national security state in 1946, 1947. He pointed out that there is no security at the top of the world. If you're at the top of the world and you are on top of the world through force, naturally there are going to be coalitions that will emerge to bring you down a notch. And one of the best expressions of this type of patriotic aversion to being the dominant power of the world through force comes from my favorite British statesman of the 18th century, Edmund Burke, who was in some ways a friend or at least a sympathizer to the American colonists in their struggle for independence against Great Britain. In 1793, when there were discussions of a potential war between Great Britain and the coalition of powers on the continent, Edmund Burke, whose patriotic credentials were unassailable, gave a wonderful address in which he talked about the fact that if you push people around, people are going to push back. That's the nature of humanity. He said the following: among precautions against ambition, it may not be amiss to take one against our own. I must fairly say I dread our own power and our own ambition. I dread our being too much dreaded. Sooner or later, This state of things must produce a combination against us, which may end in our ruin. I can't really see how that doesn't apply to our situation today. The vaunting hyperpower, the indispensable nation, Bad Maddie Albright, back when she was afflicting the world as Secretary of State, like to say that we see farther and we stand taller than others. Well, that's not exactly what our Founding Fathers meant when they talked about our mission to the world as being one of moral example. How by showing that people can be free and their liberties and rights protected by law, they weren't talking about going hither and yon seeking monsters to destroy and becoming monsters ourselves. But unfortunately, that's what the government ruling us has become.
Well, unfortunately, we have troops not stationed but occupying 130 nations. Ladies and gentlemen, when you have troops in a nation, you occupy that nation. We have 720 foreign bases. It's all about really bringing governments under control so they go along with this one world government. There can be no exceptions. If we're going to have a one world government, everybody has to belong, and our troops would be there to make sure it happens.
Talk about occupying countries militarily. That's the sort of talk that causes certain people to bribe. They insist that our troops don't invade countries, they liberate them. They insist that our troops don't occupy countries, they're there to assist them. Well, that may or may not be the case in limited circumstances, but certainly after 40 or 50 years, you've got to wonder why it is that we have troops in a Europe that is supposedly, in concept, a unified polity that has a larger population, a larger gross domestic product than the United States. Why is it we see the government in Washington, rather than taking down NATO at the end of the Cold War, the much bruited end of the Cold War in 1991, and this is something that the Russians had been promised, interestingly enough, in the early 1990s, that NATO would be, if not disbanded, at least it wouldn't be moved eastward. Well, it's been moved eastward into Russia's near abroad, and now you see NATO operating out of country in places like Afghanistan, where we have had troops stationed now for longer than the Russians did, the Soviet Union did, following the 1979 invasion that was precipitated by a CIA-backed coup that was an intentional provocation to trigger a Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. Our country has now been mired in Afghanistan for longer than the Soviet Union was. And we see troops still in Korea during this Fermata. The war that started in 1950 has never ended. There has not been an armistice. You have ceasefire. You do not have any kind of a permanent peace accord. You have basically a 60-year Fermata in probably the longest war of its kind in human history. And we see how easily we could end up becoming mired in the Korean Peninsula again. You see these kinds of facts, and the only way that you can explain what's going on is that America has become what our Founding Fathers beheld back in the late 18th century. They saw a world-spanning empire that had grown not only arrogant but torpid, and that was coasting on the intellectual and moral momentum of a history that it was not living up to. And I don't think that James Madison and Thomas Jefferson and George Washington would have any difficulty recognizing...
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan Williams simply pointing out that we have become an empire, that certainly Washington, Jefferson, the other people would recognize that, well, when we have troops stationed throughout the world, they're there to control those nations. I mean, you don't put troops in another nation unless you're going to have them for military purposes. We occupy 130 nations, and nobody will say that, probably more than that. And it's all about being sure that the rulers of those nations will go along with the world government. Once you understand that, it all makes sense. But go right ahead.
It's an important point to recognize here that what's going on in the name of Pax Americana, the so-called universal peace enforced by America, is not a substitute for a UN-dominated global regime. It's a precursor. It's sort of, if you will, and I hate to use the expression because there's a certain blasphemous nature to it, but it's almost as if Pax Americana is the John the Baptist, or the anti-John the Baptist, for the Antichrist, for the advent of some kind of UN-administered global regime, or a global regime administered through some successor organization of the UN. There are so many people who fall for the false dichotomy here. It's either Pax Americana or the United Nations. Well, quite frankly, if you take a look at the instruments that are being used to justify our perpetual entanglement in these affairs of foreign nations, they're all United Nations documents, treaties, compacts, understandings, authorizing acts, or their equivalent that are administered through regional affiliates of the United Nations, such as NATO. NATO is, for all intents and purposes, the military enforcement arm of the United Nations Security Council. If you take a look at the founding charter of NATO, it refers to itself specifically as a regional and political affiliate of the United Nations, that it was created to carry out the purposes and principles of the United Nations Charter. And a lot of the people who were very instrumental in getting NATO ratified, the NATO Treaty ratified, and the U.S. involvement in NATO ironed out, defended these actions in the name of empowering the United Nations. Then if you take a look at the history of U.S. involvement in Vietnam during the 1960s, it was conducted through SEATO, S-E-A-T-O, which was another regional affiliate of the United Nations. And so the idea was that we did not have to have Congress declare war in order to involve United States troops in missions that were conducted through multilateral arrangements of that sort. And the Partnership for Peace, so-called, which is a special project within NATO that deals with former Soviet Warsaw Pact allies, is another arrangement of that sort, more of an ad hoc one. The alliance that was created for the purpose of invading and occupying Afghanistan was worked out through NATO, but it includes non-NATO nations as well, who were brought into this coalition by way of UN Security Council action. The same kind of thing happened with the invasion of Iraq. Now, Iraq's a really interesting case in that the Security Council and the Secretary General of the United Nations were saying that there was no need for the United States to invade Iraq because there was a United Nations inspection team on the ground that had been given the task of finding these so-called weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And so you had the United Nations saying, we don't need your help, but George W. Bush was invoking United Nations Security Council resolutions saying, you can't withdraw your request, you can't withdraw your consent, we already have the black letter documents issued by the UN Security Council, and so we're going to cite these as authorization rather than the constitutionally required congressional declaration of war. And I want to elaborate upon one very important point here. This is not ancient history. This is very, very relevant because this is a really good example of how we got into the mess that we're in right now. There was no congressional declaration of war in the case of Iraq or in the case of Afghanistan. And an anodyne resolution supporting presidential action is not a congressional declaration of war any more than a common law marriage is actually a marriage or a so-called same-sex civil union is a marriage. These are not adequate substitutes. They don't have anything of substance in common with what they're supposedly replacing any more than this so-called declaration of war, this resolution having to do with recognizing and deferring to the president's decision to commit troops to war would be an actual congressional declaration of war. Iraq is a splendid example and test case of this because there was a proposed resolution of declaration of war by Congress against Iraq that was offered by Representative Ron Paul of Texas who voted against his own resolution. He wanted to get Congress on record about this. From a standing start, going to war against a country with recognized, internationally recognized borders, and a government that was recognized in international fora, that requires congressional action if nothing else did. But this was voted down by a Republican-controlled congressional committee. Henry Hyde, the late Henry Hyde, said on that occasion back in 2002, just as he had said in 1995, and he had said on many occasions in the interim, the congressional declarations of war are no longer required, that that is a dead letter, that that provision of the Constitution has fallen into desuetude. It's been transcended in practice by another means of involving our country in war. Of course, there's been no constitutional amendment. The requirement for a congressional declaration has not been rescinded. It's simply being ignored. And that once again, addresses the issue of impunity here, the fact that somebody who not only had sworn an oath to the Constitution repeatedly, as Congressman Hyde had, but had developed a reputation, a thoroughly unearned one, as it happens, for constitutional rectitude, would be so blasé in dismissing one of the core functions of Congress, which is to restrain the executive in matters of war and peace. That was a profoundly important discussion that was held during the Constitutional Convention. There was great worry on the part of the framers of the Constitution, from whatever perspective these men came, to restrain the president, to chain the dog of war, to use a very popular locution at the time. Well, they didn't declare war against Iraq, and this UN Security Council resolution being enforced by congressional approval of presidential action is not materially anything like a congressional declaration of war. But these are not, once again, alternatives to some form of world government apparatus. These are all parts and very important parts of building this world government apparatus, whether it's through the United Nations or some organization that will replace it. And there have been proposals made to reform the United Nations up to and including doing away with the existing nomenclature and keeping in substance the same organization but calling it something else. Everything that the government of the United States is doing right now is something that can be filed under the heading of icebreaker for the global government. And it's important to talk about what is going on in terms of the assault on individual liberties protected by law and the role that plays in this whole equation of creating an absolutist government that would have a plenary power over the individual. I remember that back in 1998, I did a documentary with some friends. I collaborated. It's not something that I did all by myself, obviously, but I was involved with a group of other very, very talented people in putting together a documentary about the International Criminal Court, which now is operational in Rome. In 1998, the Rome Conference on the International Criminal Court was in session, and they created a statute for the International Criminal Court that would give the United Nations, supposedly, universal jurisdiction over core crimes. There'd be crimes against humanity, war crimes, and then a third category, which is sort of a catch-all that really has not been nailed down with such specificity that I can actually give it a name. But basically, they were making the remarkable claim that the United Nations would have the authority to extradite and prosecute an individual from any country in the world, including countries that are not member states of the United Nations. There are only a couple of those left. And they could be extradited and tried in Rome before the International Criminal Court, or in The Hague before a body similarly appointed, for supposed offenses committed within their own countries. Now, what's happened, if you take a look at the predictions that were made with respect to the ICC, is that the government of the United States is doing all these things in spite of the fact that it has never ratified the Rome Agreement. The difference is that rather than having the United Nations seize people, kidnap people, and haul them to another jurisdiction in a separate country to be tried on the basis of criminal statutes that are not recognized in the country of that person's citizenship, it's the government of the United States doing this by way of extraordinary rendition. That actually started during the Clinton administration, but it's something that became notorious during the Bush administration. the idea being that you'd have universal jurisdiction, irrespective of the given laws of a country that a citizen or that a person being sought for prosecution might live in. This takes us back, in a way, to Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. How many times have you heard, and I know, Dr. Stan, you probably heard this, and most likely you've been reduced to shaking your head in dumbstruck wonder over the irony and perversion of it all. How many times have we heard Julian Assange being referred to as a traitor because of the fact that he's exposed these confidential diplomatic cables and other documents, many of which have, from where I'm sitting, prima facie evidence of serious war crimes or crimes of other kinds committed under the color of supposed authority. People have constantly referred to him as being guilty of treason. The man's an Australian national. He's not a citizen of the United States. How can somebody who's a foreign national be guilty of treason against a government that doesn't represent him or claim jurisdiction over him? No, the latter part of that formulation doesn't apply. The assumption is that the government of the United States has universal jurisdiction, that there are no limits to its extraterritoriality. And so already you're being told that we have a war on terror, the battlefield for which is the entire surface of the planet. So we're to assume here, and this is what the so-called anti-globalist right is saying, is that the government of the United States is the world government. They're making it very clear with the way that they're framing their criticism of Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, among other things.
But you see, basically, we are the world government. We are the major force driving this whole idea of a world government. We were the force behind the European Union. Uh-huh. NATO is certainly, we are part of NATO. NATO is the world army. People just can't put things into clear perspective, you know. We have a world court. We have a world criminal court. We have a world health system. We have a world police force. We have a world parliament. We have a world executive. Everything is in place. Of course, we have the world army. Everything is in place for the world government. People just are incapable of understanding how far along we are in this direction. And, you know, they know we have these troops overseas. They don't understand what the troops are there for. They know we have 720 military bases. Nobody ever says this is part of the American empire moving the world towards world government. Go ahead.
Yeah. And the other thing that people don't recognize is that once the props are kicked out from beneath our economy, then the architecture that has been created during the era of relative prosperity and dominance is going to remain, and it's going to be inhabited by someone else. It's almost, well, it's not almost, it's quite literally biblical, where there are passages, for instance, in the book of Isaiah, where it talks about how for punishment that... the houses that will be built, the houses that you would build will be occupied by others. Well, the United States has built the house of world government. If you take, once again, you mentioned, Dr. Stan, the role that was played by the American elite in creating the European Union. This is something that was done primarily by the CIA and by the Federal Reserve. In other words, by the people really running things here in the United States. All these programs were put in place and actively promoted by the American intelligence community and by what's much the same thing, the banking elite. And once the architecture was built, then another group of people went in and inhabited it. Well, the same kind of thing's going on right now with the transition from the Bush administration to the Obama administration. There's not really that much material difference between Bush and Obama in terms of the policy aspect of what's going on, but in terms of the ideological rationale, there are some interesting disagreements and distinctions. Mr. Obama is somebody who's made a career promoting the idea of what he called redistributive change, creating coalitions of power to redistribute wealth. You know, he's a community organizer in the same sense that Vladimir Lenin was a community organizer. And if you take a look at his background, his mother's boss, when she was involved in micro-lending in Indonesia, was a Ford Foundation individual who was the father of Timothy Geithner, and most likely a CIA officer. And it's pretty clear, on the basis of that element of Mr. Obama's biography and the connections on the part of his mother, that Mr. Obama was talent scouted by this same elite, probably when he was a chubby kid going to a school in Indonesia. They probably, from that point, had been keeping files on him and guiding his career. There's certainly enough lacunae in his biography and his academic record to suggest that somebody was running interference for him from the time he was a very, very young man. But in terms of the way he got to the White House, he pursued a slightly different vector as a Marxist community organizer than George W. Bush did, George W. Bush being the scion of a very well-connected establishment family, one of the most powerful elements of the power elite, as far as I'm concerned, to be the Bush family. Their connections with the Saudis, if nothing else, make them very daunting in terms of the power that they have, and Mr. Bush's connections with the intelligence community, you know, going back to and even before the Kennedy assassination, are very detailed and very provocative. They came to the purple from different vectors, but the point is that they're doing pretty much the same kind of thing for the same reason. Bush, during his reign, created doctrines of executive power under which the President of the United States supposedly has the authority to do pretty much anything he wills to anybody he selects for any reason of his choosing. That includes, of course, indefinite detention, includes torture, it includes summary execution. Well, guess what? Barack Obama has those same powers. He's building on them right now. What was built under Bush is being occupied by Obama. Well, what's going to happen after the dollar collapses and the pretense of our wealth and power are pretty much dispelled for all to see is that what Washington has been building is going to be occupied by another. Now, chances are that other will include many from the current cast of people who are ruling us right now. I mean, these people are not Americans in the sense that we're Americans. They're Americans by birth, but not by conviction. They're people who are far more comfortable in the rarefied realms of the transnational elite, where they're not encumbered by such things as attachments to specific people in specific places, all these quaint, archaic, and I suppose from their view, retrograde attachments that define the rest of us. So, when the dollar collapses and the Colossus pancakes on itself, and whoever it is who's going to occupy that building comes to power, they'll probably be pretty well taken care of, at least for a little while. But eventually they'll get the payment for their doings, and that's when things are really going to get interesting.
Well, we're living in really the most exciting time, certainly, of my life, and what a wonderful time to have an opportunity to reach people. And we know that people all across America, all across the world, listen to our programs on a regular basis, and I know many of them look forward to your program here every Friday evening, but I share your concern. Everything is in place for this world government. This is long-term planning. It's been around. They've been trying to do this for thousands of years, but we are living at that unique time in history where everything is in place. They've tried it before. They've almost got there. They've never accomplished it. Will they accomplish it this time, or will perhaps God intervene? We'll be back in a moment. Well, William, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Dr. Stan, thank you so much. It's really a blessing to be with you, and I do want to
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried Guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com. 1-800-SPECIAL.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. It is 3 December. Thank you very much for joining us today, caring about your world. Caring enough to tune in and get people turned on to the truth. And I know that you are a truth seeker. Otherwise, you'd be laying around watching Imus in the morning and listening to his disgusting jokes. But you know what? We're not at the Power Hour. We want to learn. We want to know. And I've got my buddy here in the studio with me, Josh.
Good morning.
And we're so glad to have him joining us today. Thank you very, very much for caring about your life, your health, and wanting others to do just the same. That's what it's all about, is learning more, doing more, and feeling better. And if you haven't started feeling better yet, well, you may want to consider changing your diet just a little bit. Thinking about that as the new year comes around, what you can do to feel better this year. You know, that's where the power is, in having the energy to stave off all of this incredible chaos. And I'll tell you, when you watch Judge Napolitano at 7 p.m. Central Time, you know, it almost makes you feel like there's some sanity in the world. If you haven't watched him, check it out. If you do have a TV, if you do partake in television, Judge Napolitano calls it like it is also. So you get a little balance there from all the craziness that is in the world. I'll tell you, I think that we're going to find the Bill O'Reilly ratings dropping like a large stone very soon.
And why is that?
Because Judge Napolitano addresses the issues from a constitutional standpoint, and he calls it like it is. You know, where Bill O'Reilly will say, well, I want to be safe on an airplane, you know, Judge Napolitano will say, but if you lose all your constitutional rights, and you are, by acquiescing to this, then it's not of any value. And he says we're headed for a very dangerous time also. He's very strong on the WikiLeaks guy not being guilty of anything. He said, here's the problem. If WikiLeaks can be controlled and arrested and use the military, which they're now saying, to go after his servers.
Really?
Yeah. You know what? He said, no freedom in journalism will exist.
Exactly. I mean, that's complete control. Wow. That's incredible.
And he's just the beginning. And he said, I know this is just the beginning. So he is very strong that this man should be allowed to leak if he wants to. You know, the man didn't break any laws by getting the material. And whoever did it, and I don't think it was that young gay guy, that sergeant or the PFC, I don't believe it was that guy that could get access to all those documents. Otherwise, well, what were they thinking by giving them all to a PFC? Think about it, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, that's like right coming into the military. Does he have any responsibility or any accountability at that point? He said he was mad at the military. It just sounds too much like another one of those cartoon character stories for us. Anyway, Nigeria, of all countries, wants to charge Dick Cheney in a bribery case. My response, you go, Nigeria. Couldn't make me any happier. On his sick bed, you know, he's got that pump on him. Granted, they've made the batteries a lot smaller now so that you can kind of walk around with your pump, but I kind of think he's a pretty sick man. Anyway, Federal Reserve now may be the central bank of the world.